I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. Today kicked off the second week of televised impeachment hearings. The House Intelligence Committee is hearing testimony from eight more witnesses over the next 3 days. Key witnesses, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, the top Ukraine expert on the National Security Council, and Jennifer Williams, a national security aide to Vice President Mike Pence, both returned to Capitol Hill this morning. And in the afternoon, Kurt Volker, the former U.S. Special Envoy to Ukraine, and Tim Morrison, former National Security Council aide, took the stand. Unlike the witnesses who testified last week, three of today's witnesses, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, Williams, and Morrison, actually listened in on the July 25th call at the center of the impeachment proceedings. And during that conversation, President Trump allegedly pressed Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky for dirt on former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter. Both Vindman and Williams said the call was troubling. Here with updates from the hearings is WNYC's Arun Venugopal in New York. Hi, Arun.
Hey, Tanzina. There is a lot to get to from today's public hearings, and I have Jamie Floyd, legal editor and host of All Things Considered at WNYC, here with me in the studio to go through what we learned so far. Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Arun.
So this morning's hearings opened with a pretty forceful statement from Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman about President Trump's July 25th phone call with Ukrainian President Zelensky. Here's what he had to say.
It is improper for the President of the United States to demand a foreign government investigate a U.S. citizen and a political opponent.
Considering Vindman's role as a Ukraine expert on the National Security Council, Jamie, how significant was that opening statement from him?
I think that the Lieutenant Colonel, thus far, Arun, has been the most significant witness we've seen. His opening statement was incredibly powerful. He was direct. His facts were compelling. These witnesses we've seen today and that we will see this week are the witnesses with direct knowledge of the phone call, the infamous July 25th phone call. The witnesses we saw last week were setting the stage, but as the White House has pointed out over and over again, they did not have direct knowledge. They were laying the groundwork, if you will, for Adam Schiff, who chairs this committee and is a former prosecutor, so he knows how to set the scene, set up a case. But these witnesses, and Vindman in particular, was on the call. Many people were on the call, and that is not unusual, Arun, but he was on the call. He's a Ukraine expert. He's a Purple Heart hero. And the statement, Arun, he ends with turning to his father, who was a refugee from Russia, of all places, who brought his three sons and his wife to the United States. All three sons serve in the U.S. military. And he says, Dad, thank you for making the courageous decision to come here 40 years ago. Do not worry. I will be safe. I'm telling the truth. So his opening statement, incredibly powerful on the facts and incredibly powerful for who he is as a person, as a citizen, and as a witness.
We also heard from Jennifer Williams, who is a national security aide to Vice President Mike Pence. Here's what she had to say about the July 25th call in her opening statement.
During my closed-door deposition, members of the committee asked about my personal views and whether I had any concerns about the July 25th call. As I testified then, I found the July 25th phone call unusual because, in contrast to other presidential calls I had observed, it involved discussion of what appeared to be a domestic political matter.
So she says the call is unusual.
Yeah.
What else stood out to you about her opening statement?
Okay. Much was made of the fact that she's detailed to Vice President Pence, and essentially so is Vindman. But that's how the White House works, Arun. I worked there, and, you know, listening today, more than last week, because I was never in Foreign Service, but I was in the White House a lot of years ago in the Clinton administration. But I was detailed from Vice President Gore's office to Hillary Clinton's healthcare war room. That is how it works. People are shifted all around according to their expertise. Mm-hmm. This woman is an expert in certain areas. She's essentially a public servant as well, a foreign service professional with a very hefty, she's not his administrative assistant.
Right.
She is advising him in certain areas related to Ukraine, essentially, and some other parts of that region. And so she being detailed to him doesn't take away from her extreme expertise in this area. And so we shouldn't make anything of that, though they did try to. She listened in on the call. She wasn't as aggressive in reporting it as Lieutenant Colonel Vindman did to the NSC, but she did note that she was concerned because she'd listened in on a dozen other calls, as is normal for someone in her position, and had never heard anything like this before. And her expertise counseled her to think something is not right here.
So let's talk about policy. How does policy come up in today's proceedings?
Well, it comes up almost immediately. I mean, when the Lieutenant Colonel testifies, he says, I was immediately concerned. He doesn't use the word outraged, but I immediately knew this was wrong because it was improper for the president to demand, is the word he used, that a foreign power investigate a political opponent. It was a partisan play. It undermined our Ukraine policy, which he was working on and was an expert in. It undermined our national security. And that is why he did report it, and he went to the NSC attorney, John Eisenberg. So those are the reasons, and the Ukraine policy was central to his concern. The stated Ukraine policy. Now, the Republicans will say, well, that's the Ukraine policy as you saw it. President Trump had a different policy in mind. But if we have a stated policy that our entire national security community is working on, the back channel policy really can't be something else. And that's what this impeachment inquiry is going to root out.
You used the word demand, which he himself used.
Yes, correct.
This was the subject of, I guess, of some discussion.
Yes.
Demand versus favor. And Republicans as well, I think, trying to sort of parse out the difference between one and the other. Take us there. How did he interpret what he saw as the president's use of the word favor as, in fact, a demand?
Well, he said, I am from a military background, as he sat there in his dress blues. And he said, I saw it as a demand because there is chain of command here. The president is a more powerful person with something critically important to offer. And when he asks, in quotes, for a favor, it's essentially a demand if you want that aid, if you want those missiles, if you want that meeting. So there's an understanding, says Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, and that understanding is essentially a demand.
At one point during the hearing, Republican Devin Nunes, ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, questioned Lieutenant Colonel Vindman about a member of the intelligence community who Vindman talked to about the July 25th phone call. And House Intelligence Chairman Adam Schiff cut in to warn Nunes against trying to out the whistleblower. Let's hear that exchange.
As you know, the intelligence community has 17 different agencies. What agency was this individual from?
If I could interject here, we don't want to use these proceedings.
It's our time,
I know,
Mr. Chair.
But we need to protect the whistleblower.
Please stop.
I want to make sure that there's no effort to out the whistleblower through the use of these proceedings. If the witness has a good faith belief that this may reveal the identity of the whistleblower, that is not the purpose that we are here for, and I want to advise the witness accordingly.
All right, so this is a really important exchange. It cuts to the heart of what's happening. The entire proceedings were launched because one person, the unnamed whistleblower, came forward, and now here we are. How did this play to you, Jamie
Floyd?
Yeah,
well, this happened several times today. The effort to tie Vindman to the whistleblower, the effort to bring the whistleblower's presence into this proceeding. In fact, before we even get to Vindman's testimony, Devin Nunes, in his opening statement, the ranking member of the Republican Party in the committee, spent a good part of his opening statement attacking the media. Fascinating to me. But then attacking the whistleblower and the media for protecting the whistleblower, and then getting back into the Ukraine meddling theory, conspiracy theory, unproven, and the Biden storyline. So trying to shift everybody's focus back to President Trump's theory that Biden and his son should be investigated. So he spent a good portion of his opening statement on this whistleblower. And then when Vindman is testifying, is suggesting that Vindman, this conversation he's had may have been with this unknown whistleblower. And several times, by my count, Adam Schiff jumps in and asserts protection of the whistleblower. This is critically important for a number of reasons. Yes, the whistleblower launched this investigation, but also, Arun, protections for whistleblowers, federal whistleblowers, are not what they need to be. The need to protect this whistleblower is critically important, and there really is no need at this point to hear from the whistleblower because we have a long list of witnesses who can attest to the information that the whistleblower initially provided. And it's also, it's a bit of a red herring, I believe, this is my legal analysis, that the Republicans are putting out there to distract us from key witnesses who are on the call. The whistleblower told us about the call, but now we have the witnesses who are willing to come forward under subpoena, and were there. They were in the room where it happened.
Once again, we saw a Republican line of defense that sought to shift the focus of the hearings onto both the debunked theory surrounding a Ukrainian plot to disrupt the 2016 U.S. elections and also the role of Hunter Biden on the board of Burisma. Were they successful in advancing this agenda?
Well, you know, it depends on who you ask, right? I mean, my Twitter feed's blowing up with all perspectives. 30% are solidly with Trump, and there is nothing you are going to say to shift them off these theories, these fairly debunked conspiracy theories about Ukraine and Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. 30% are fully immersed in the Democratic pursuit of impeachment. And everybody else, I don't know. Are they catching fire with what's happening? Are they paying attention? What's happening? Are folks realizing that this is a moment of American history that they need to lock into? I certainly hope so, but I don't know. But I will say this. I don't think Hunter Biden should have been in Ukraine. If he'd been my son, I would have yanked him back over here, adult or no.
Yeah.
But that has very little to do with Joe Biden. Joe Biden was doing something completely different and following U.S. policy and European Union policy in recalling or actually ousting the prosecutor who was fired. And it's a very complicated story. And it's hard for busy working Americans or anyone to dial into that story. But it now is irrelevant. It's irrelevant, Arun, because the question now is, what did President Trump do? Even if Joe Biden had done something wrong, even if he had, which he hasn't, the sitting president cannot leverage pressure on a foreign government to investigate it. That is not legal. He's done something wrong if it can be proved he did that. And the witnesses are starting to come forward who were on the call and heard it. So whatever was going on in Ukraine, that call is problematic and very likely grounds for impeachment.
Jamie Floyd is legal editor and host of All Things Considered at WNYC. Thanks so much, Jamie.
Thank you, Arun.